Here's Andy Udman.
The issue with artificial trans fats is even at low amounts, they increase the risk of chronic or cardiovascular disease. And in Middlesex, London, cardiovascular disease is a leading cause of death and illness. And actually, that's locally, provincially, and nationally. The artificial trans fats are produced by industry when they take vegetable oils and they saturate them with hydrogen molecules. It's to make them more stable so that they last longer. And you might find them in sources like margarine, baked goods, crackers, or deep fried foods.
Pam, the health unit in London tonight going to talk about boosting their efforts to get rid of trans fats. Do we actually hear applause from Pam Colleen for the local health unit?
Well, I think it's a great start. I think it's fantastic that they're looking at trans fats and the damaging effects of trans fats. It's unfortunate that these foods have been on the shelves now for about 100 years here in Canada. These products should never have been approved for human consumption in the first place.
Wait a minute. Is Pam Colleen on the same page as the Middlesex London Health Unit? This may be a historic show this morning, folks. Good morning, London. It is Andy Udman along with Pam Colleen. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning, Andy.
You on the same page as the health unit.
I give them credit for, you know, taking initiatives here to get rid of or reduce our consumption of trans fats. The trouble is, of course, they're still recommending things like spreads. And these edible oils, unfortunately, are not acceptable for human consumption in the masses that we're eating them today. I mean, what we've been doing over the last 100 years is increasing our consumption of vegetable oils. And that has only been to our, health demise.
See,
it
people,
hasn't been helping us at all.
People ask me that. They say, well, vegetable oils, that's natural. Isn't that good?
Well, it's not really that natural. I mean, the oils should be naturally occurring in the food and we shouldn't be pressing them out in the first place. I mean, when you concentrate an oil like that and eat massive quantities of them, it's going to throw off your biochemistry. There's no question about that. I mean, we've seen this over the last 100 years and the research is showing more and more how damaging it is to throw off our omega-3-to-6 ratio, for example. What we've done over the last 100 years, rather than having a 1-to-1 ratio of omega-3 to 6, we are now somewhere in the vicinity of a 25-to-1 ratio of omega-6 to 3. And this gets technical, Andy, but it really just shows that our fatty acid profiles are in a state of disarray, and we need to balance them out like our ancestors had them.
Do you applaud, just so the record is clear, what the health unit is going to propose tonight?
Well, I do applaud it, but I still think we need to be very leery, because unfortunately, within the same sentence, they're going to say, oh yeah, we have to put trans fats in the same category of saturated fat, and saturated fat is our friend. So they're still, we're still taking the eye off the target here.
Okay, Ryan, if we could, just that first clip of Kim Lacey from the health unit on what it is she's proposing tonight.
The issue with artificial trans fats is even at low amounts, they increase the risk of chronic or cardiovascular disease. And in Middlesex, London, cardiovascular disease is a leading cause of death and illness. And actually, okay, so that's locally, provincially, and nationally.
Okay, so, and then let's go to the next one. Ryan, Lacey A, if we could, audio clip Lacey A. Here we go.
The issue with artificial trans fats is even at low amounts, they increase the risk of chronic or cardiovascular disease. And in Middlesex, London, cardiovascular disease is a leading cause of death and illness. And actually, that's locally, provincially, and nationally.
So where do we find artificial trans fat?
The artificial trans fats are produced by industry when they take vegetable oils and they saturate them with hydrogen molecules. It's to make them more stable so that they last longer. And you might find them in sources like margarine, baked goods, crackers, or deep fried foods.
Now, you mentioned in this report here, people who should be listening to this information are men between the ages of 45 and 64 and ladies between the ages of 45 and 64. Why is it important for them to listen to this interview?
Well, it's important for everybody, but specifically in Middlesex, London, heart disease is the leading cause of death in men of those ages, 45 to 65, also in seniors, and the third leading cause of death for women, 45 to 64.
Okay, so the heart of what you say you agree with, but it's...
It's still not hitting the target, Andy. I mean, we need to reduce our consumption of vegetable oils. Whether they're liquid or they're hydrogenated or fractionated or whatever the process is, these oils are damaging to our health. And what they should be doing is saying avoid or reduce your consumption of vegetable oils in general and turn to the traditional fats that we know kept us healthy for millennia.
She did mention low fat at one point.
Well, and that's a huge mistake, of course, because her ancestors would have been would have eaten a high fat diet for generations and generations. I mean, historically, humans ate a high fat diet. If you're from a European ancestral lineage, then your diet should be 70% animal fat. So we should be getting the bulk of our calories from animal fats. And unfortunately, they're not getting us this message through the Health Canada or the health units.
But specifically on the trans fats issue, I thought that was dealt with several years ago. I mean, we saw some of the big food chains announcing that they were cutting out trans fats.
But they didn't really, Andy. They hid them in the foods, and so you don't see it on the label. It'll say that there's no trans fats in the product when indeed there are trans fats in the product. So what you need to do as a consumer is you need to look on the label and see if you see words like canola, cotton, soy, corn. If you see those foods on a label, then you need to avoid that food, because if the food isn't hydrogenated, it's highly, highly processed, and you still should avoid those oils.
Now, this all follows close on the heels of our discussion a week or two about red meat.
Absolutely. And I want to show two contradictions here. I mean, this story that came out recently about red meat being so lethal. I did a show the other day with Tom McConnell, who's with your sister station in St. Catharines. And I tell you, Tom is quite astute, and he should have been a scientist himself. But at any rate, we did a story on it. And he pointed out in the study, and this is directly from the study, it showed that men and women with higher intakes of red meat were less likely to be physically active and were more likely to smoke, drink alcohol, and have a higher body mass. The researchers attempted to control for these variables, but it is difficult to separate out the effects of meat consumption from other lifestyle habits, and cause and effect relationship can't be determined.
In other words, we got a report on red meat, which scared the dickens out of people. I mean, almost made them sell their barbecue,
right?
In a sense.
Yeah, and of course, we did a show to calm the masses and tell them, you know, our ancestors did very well on red meat. And of course, the problem with red meat is going to be that it's highly processed, and of course, that the cows are fed the wrong kinds of foods. But at any rate, the conclusion basically shows that the subjects smoked more, drank more, and were more obese, were less physically active, and only had a 13% greater chance of dying. So Tom's remark was, well, it seems to me that the red meat had a protective element going on here.
So the report is suggesting exactly the opposite of what you're saying.
Well, and
people
it doesn't discriminate between the differences of red meat. I mean, when you buy red meat from a pastured source and it's unprocessed and it's whole, that's a healthy piece of meat. But the meat that you're getting in a grocery store, unfortunately, is from a factory farm cow that's been fed potentially genetically engineered corn, genetically engineered soy, and has the wrong fatty acid profile, omega 6 versus 3, for example. And that meat, unfortunately, is not as healthy as what you can get from a local farm.
Your approach to all of this is eat red meat. Just make sure of the source, that it's grass-fed, that it's organic, and it's good for you. Not bad, like the report
And the more man touches food, the worse it is for you. And, of course, these highly processed deli meats are something you probably want to avoid, yes.
Okay, I want to ask you about an interview that Steve Garrison did this morning on antibiotics. Are they also getting the message, not only on trans fats, but on antibiotics? We have to take a short break. I want to play you just a brief portion of this suggestion that we are finally learning that, drugs are not the answer to all of our health issues. In fact, maybe just the opposite. And, of course, the connection between this issue of the antibiotics and this new superbug in our hospitals, which is, folks, you just don't want to get sick. The superbug in our hospitals. You don't want to go there. Back with that in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Even when Pam Killeen is rocking the house as she does every Thursday morning at 10 o'clock, we keep the lines open. We're going to move to the issue of antibiotics in just a moment. But Diane, you have a question.
Yeah, I do. I thought that I was eating something that's healthy. We have been using a little more butter, but the Basel tub I have in my hand right now, it says Healthy Choice. Heart and Stroke Foundation, you know, they advocate that you use this, and yet Pam's saying don't use canola, and 92% canola and sunflower oil, and then there's palm oil in it. So are we to take from what she's saying we shouldn't be using Basel?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's going to give you too much of the omega-6 fats, and it's also extremely highly processed. Canola oil also will increase your body's need for vitamin E. So, you know, it's just best to avoid those foods, those newfangled foods, and eat traditional foods that your ancestors lived on, and that would be things like butter.
Diane, let me ask you, Pam this question. Just give me a phrase about margarine, period.
Well, margarine, like they say, is one step short of being plastic. And that's true. It's a highly processed food. It shouldn't ever have been approved for human consumption.
Let's be blunt. Mm-hmm. No one should ever eat margarine.
Or spreads. Avoid them.
Okay. I want to hear those words from your lips. Yeah. No one should ever eat margarine.
No. In fact, if you do a little experiment in your backyard and you put margarine, spread, and butter outside, and look and see if even insects will eat the margarine or the spread, and they won't. They will go for the butter, and they're smarter than we are, because unfortunately it's marketing this, pushing these newfangled foods, and they have been destroying our health now for several decades.
Okay, so if we do any pan frying, then should we just retain our bacon fat and fry our eggs and fry any vegetables or anything that we want to pan fry, use our bacon fat?
That's right. That's what we've been doing for thousands of years.
Okay.
That is a heat stable fat. So the fats that are the most stable in heat are going to be things like butter, lard, tallow, and even olive oil is okay in heat as well.
What about coconut oil?
Coconut oil, you have to keep the temperature down a bit, but you can cook in coconut oil if you like. You just have to watch the temperature.
Okay. I sure appreciate you coming on, because I'll tell you, everybody thinks that we're doing the right thing, and like you said, we always wonder why we're getting sicker and sicker. We go to the doctor, and our doctors are not trained to know this either, so I think maybe they should go back to school and have some nutrition. I'm not knocking our doctors, because I love my doctor, and she does the best she can. But they can only do with what they're given.
Yeah, and it's hard for them to differentiate between real science and marketing-based science. That's very difficult to do these days.
Diane, it's a sad thing that Pam has taught me about doctors. They may be oh so nice while being oh so wrong about so many issues. Thanks, Diane. Appreciate it. Okay, Ryan, if you could just play the first portion of this interview that Steve Garrison did, because I want to ask Pam Colleen about antibiotics and this connection to the superbug. This is with a doctor who speaks on our show on a regular basis, Dr. Shulman, and to the Astro Radio chain on various medical issues. But this morning it was on antibiotics.
It's infections, and we've heard about, well, you know, you go to the doctor and you say, hey, doc, give me something, some antibiotics. And now we're hearing from Health Canada that is a no-no. What can you tell us?
Basically, those of us who are in the know have always known that most of the time when you're complaining of a sinus infection, it's usually either allergies or a virus, and antibiotics really won't help you. But there are a small subcategory of people who really do need antibiotics. And what's just come out is some very interesting guidelines that kind of build on the data that's been there before and helps doctors to make a wiser decision. So if you walk into my office and you see me, or into the emergency room and you see me, and you're complaining of sinus, your sinuses are blocked and you have a little bit of an ache, but you don't have a fever, you don't have other symptoms and signs, it's not really been there for very long, I will probably tell you, let's tough it out, let's put you on some nasal sprays, basically corticosteroids, to reduce the inflammation. Let's give it a little while and see what happens. If it persists, or if it gets worse, or if you have a high fever, or if you have redness or tenderness over the areas of your sinuses, that's when we're going to hit you with antibiotics. The other interesting thing that came out of these guidelines were that antihistamines and decongestants probably don't make a big difference in terms of curing the infection, which we probably knew, but they may make you feel better. So we're going to have a discussion, you and I, if you come into the office or into the emergency, I'm going to say, listen, I can put you on a decongestant and antihistamine, but if you use the decongestant, be careful, because if you abuse it, you're going to get rebound effects and be even sicker. If you use the antihistamine, you may be a little bit dried out, you may have some other problems, but if you're willing to put it up and it's really bothering you, I'll give you a prescription for these, and we'll watch and we'll wait, and if we'll need to, we'll add on the antibiotics in a couple of days' time.
Health Canada keeps talking about this super bug. What do they mean by that?
Oh, there are a number of really nasty bugs that are out there, and what they've basically done is they've developed the ability to resist most of the antibiotics that we want to use. Now, luckily, none of them is completely invincible, thank goodness, but it's one of the reasons why we have to be very careful about how we use antibiotics. Why? If you use antibiotics, and especially if you don't use them properly, you knock down most of the bugs, we'll say 99% of them. 1% is still lurking, but your symptoms are gone. So you say, I'm feeling better, what do I need these for? You stop your antibiotics a couple of days earlier than the doctor told you to stop them. And what happens is that 1% is still there. Well, the 1% that survived, survived because they were tougher, because they had resistance. They now take over. And if you share them with the people around you, that's how resistant bugs get out into the community, or one of the ways. There are other ways as well. And so if you're going to use antibiotics, we want to use them when we really need to, and we want to use them properly so that we actually zap the bug and knock it down, kill them all, so none of them can come back to haunt us or to infect other people.
Dr. Mitch Shulman with us.
Overuse. Dr. Mitch Shulman in conversation with Steve Garrison this morning. Overuse of antibiotics, warnings about where that'll lead. Your thoughts.
Well, first of all, the real solution to the problem lies in the mucosal lining of our guts, because that's about where 70 to 80% of our immune system lies. So what we need to do is honor the lining of our gut and eat the foods that support the lining of our gut. And that's exactly what we're not doing today to keep our immune system strong. So if you are subjected or exposed to a bug, if you don't have a strong immune system, i.e. a strong gut lining, it could latch on and infect you. So you need to do things, you need to eat the foods that support the gut lining, and that would be things like real yogurt, real kefir, real sauerkraut, potentially take probiotics, and eat lots of animal fat, because animal fat is crucial for your immune system as well.
But you've been warning about antibiotics for so long, mm-hmm. Now to hear it from someone else is just refreshing.
Well, even the World Health Organization, Margaret Chan was on TV the other day talking about antibiotic resistance and how we've been abusing antibiotics. But keep in mind that these factory farms, Andy, wouldn't be in existence without antibiotics. The biggest market for antibiotics is the factory farm industry. These animals couldn't be confined in these unhygienic conditions without the use of antibiotics. And that's where a lot of the problems are coming, and that's where a lot of these superbugs are going to be generated from.
And a lot of those farms are right around London,
Ontario.
Oh,
you can smell them. You can smell them. Stand downwind from you. It smells of infection. It smells of disease when you stand downwind from these CAFOs.
A couple of farmers just drove off a township road just outside of London. Okay, 10:30 news update coming up in just a moment. I'm holding a book, which we're going to talk about with the author in the next half hour, Soy, the whole soy story. And then in small letters underneath, the very best part, the dark side of America's favorite health food. Give me 20 seconds on soy.
Well, in the words of Dr. Kayla Daniel, who is the naughty nutritionist because she goes against all established nutritional thinking, she's going to talk about how soy can tank our libido, impair reproduction, and cause or contribute to other health problems. And so she's going to tell us that soy is not a health food. It is not the answer to world hunger. It is not a panacea, and it is not, has never been proven to be safe.
Another sacred cow goes down. We'll be back with Pam Colleen and with Dr. Kayla T. Daniel, the author of The Whole Soy Story, The Dark Side of America's Favorite Health Food, on the other side of this news update, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290, CJBK.
So soy has been heavily marketed as curing everything from cancer to ingrown toenails. But the fact is it doesn't, and the studies are inconsistent and contradictory and mixed at best. What we've got happening right now is the Israeli Health Ministry has come out and warned against soy. They've said babies should not get soy formula, that children up to age 18 should eat it no more than 3 times a week and no more than once a day, and that adults should be cautious because of adverse effects on fertility and increased breast cancer risk.
Soy. What do you think of when you think of soy? Good or bad? Good or bad? Andy Udman in conversation with Pam Colleen on more health issues. Pam, you asked the average person on the street, good or bad, soy, what would they say?
I think people are catching on to the damaging effects of soy, but I still think it's a belief system among most people that it is a health food, unfortunately.
I talked to someone recently who knew we were doing this interview, and I mentioned we were going to do an interview with the author of a book called The Whole Soy Story, and that it may have some very serious health effects. And she said, I drink soy milk. I drink soy milk. I really do. And I said, well, you might want to listen to this interview. And she said, does it cause cancer? And I said, well, it has a number of serious health effects that you don't want to know. I like soy milk. I'm going to drink soy milk. It's healthy. Sad. Would you interview, introduce our guest this morning?
Yes, it's Dr. Kayla Daniel. She is known as the Naughty Nutritionist, and she is the author of the book, The Whole Soy Story. So Kayla is calling us this morning from New Mexico. Good morning, Kayla.
Good morning.
Good morning, Doctor, and welcome to Canada.
Thank you.
I love Canada. You never thought it would be that easy to get across the border, did you?
Oh, it's very easy by phone.
there we go. Let me ask you the question that we were just talking about. Yeah, you talk to the average person on the street in New Mexico or in London, Ontario. You just mentioned the word soy. What's their reaction?
Well, it's very interesting because people have this idea that if something tastes really bad, that it's got to be good for us. And most people don't like the taste of soy, so they assume it's, of course, very healthy. And, of course, soy is marketed very heavily as healthy. And we hear it's going to cure everything. It's going to prevent cancer. It's going to prevent heart disease. It's the ticket to a healthy menopause. I mean, we hear all sorts of wonderful things about how soy is good for us. But, you know, the word is getting out. There's a whole lot of people who've experienced problems from soy, and word of mouth is really helping tell the truth about this.
Now, Kayla, you've been reading the news out of Canada. You sent me an article out of Canada Newswire back in February with a headline saying that the Canadian vegetable oil industry gets approval for new health claim. This sounds very damaging for Canadian health.
It is, and we've got this kind of thing going on all over the world. But we've got some good news in that department, too, because in Europe, the soy industry is really, really upset. One of their releases actually says their blood's boiling because they get rejected over and over for permission to use a soy lowers cholesterol and prevents heart disease health claim in Europe. So, you know, we've got a few victories happening.
Yeah, but what's going on with our Canadian government? Why aren't they listening to this research? What's going on here?
I don't know. It's really tragic because we've got that situation here in the United States, and it just goes on, and people are getting sicker and sicker.
Well, let me ask you about that specifically, Doctor, and we'll just keep in mind that here in London, Ontario, southwestern Ontario, a very agricultural region, we have a string of cash crops, but there are two main ones, the two big ones, corn and soybeans. And here you are, the author of a book called The Whole Soy Story, The Dark Side of America's Favorite Health Food. Doctor, would you give us a snapshot of the dark side?
Well, I first wanted to mention, you mentioned corn and soy, and those, of course, are the two biggest genetically modified crops. And the corn is as dangerous to us probably as the soy, particularly in all the forms it's showing up in our processed, packaged, and fast foods and so forth. But soy is my area that I've researched. And the bottom line on soy is it causes digestive distress, thyroid disorders, reproductive problems, including infertility and loss of libido. It's been connected with attention deficit disorders. It's one of the top 8 allergens and soon to be in the top 4 allergens, more and more people reacting to soy. And for those people, of course, a huge, huge challenge because soy is in more than 60% of processed and packaged foods, and it's in about 100% of fast foods. So anyone trying to avoid soy pretty much has to cook real food at home, which, of course, is ideal anyway.
Well, every woman who's listening to this show has suddenly sat up, and you have their ear because you've mentioned soy linked to infertility. Every man who is listening to this show suddenly has his ear stuck to the side of the radio because you have mentioned the three most threatening words in the English language for a male, loss of libido. Let's start with the men. Is there a link between soy and loss of libido?
Absolutely. And in terms of anecdotal evidence that's really memorable, we've got the situation where in Asia, soy was traditionally used in the Zen monasteries because it helped men to maintain their vows of chastity, because it seemed that when the tofu consumption went up, the libido went down. And so that was useful if you're a monk. And that could be obviously really good for some of our politicians as well.
I've never heard that tofu helps you to be a better monk.
And we talk about the lowered sperm count as well, Kayla.
Oh, well, that's the science part. There's a lot of evidence that soy reduces both the quality and the quantity of sperm. And some studies coming out of Harvard a few years ago absolutely astonished the researchers because they found that the men who ate soy only a couple times a week, the men in infertile couples, had a dramatically reduced sperm count.
Go ahead.
Well, soy was definitely the culprit. And what we're getting around to there is soy has a high plant estrogen content. And it's not the same as human estrogens, but it's close enough to cause all sorts of hormonal havoc. And with men, what we're seeing a lot is lowered testosterone, lowered production, and lowered ability of the man to use the testosterone in the body. And, of course, that's going to have a huge effect on a man's reproductive life, his libido, and many other aspects of his health as well.
Okay, so men are right now in a state of total shock saying, is that doctor on the radio suggesting that a reduced sex drive, reduced sperm count, problems with fertility may be, in fact, related to your consumption of soy?
Absolutely. But I don't want to say soy is the only culprit because we've got a lot of estrogens, environmental estrogens in plastics and pesticides, in the water supply. We've got a lot of other really damaging foods in the food supply these days.
Okay, now we promised that we would jump immediately to the other half of this picture, and that is for women, the issue of infertility. What's the evidence?
Yes, with women, the plant estrogens can over-estrogenize the woman. And if some women are over-estrogenized, some it sometimes can reduce their estrogen levels. It's not completely predictable. But what we do know is there's a long list of studies that indict soy in respect to a woman's menstrual cycle, often lengthening it, often changing the patterns in ways indicative of infertility.
Now, a lot of the soy foods on the market, Kayla, are actually just a waste product from the soybean oil industry. You found that out during your investigation.
Yes, I did. And the most dangerous products are the ones with the strange names, things like soy protein isolate, textured vegetable protein, hydrolyzed plant protein, soy protein concentrate, all of those are modern industrialized processes that came about after World War II. There is nothing traditional or Asian about those processes. And those are the kinds of ingredients we're finding in a lot of soy shakes, we're finding in veggie burgers, energy bars, a whole lot of modern products. And that's really different from having, say, a little bit of tofu once in a while. And old-fashioned miso soup, that's a traditional soup to eat. It's nourishing. We can enjoy things like that. The biggest risks are either high consumption of soy or these modern products that have soy protein isolate and also a whole lot of flavorings and additives and things like MSG in them.
So what are you saying? Ideally, no soy in your diet whatsoever?
I don't think you have to have no soy unless you're actually allergic. And, of course, there's more and more people who are allergic. And we have to be careful if we've got fertility problems or especially thyroid problems. But a whole lot of people think moderation is drinking that soy milk every single day. And what I want to say is soy milk is actually one of the worst products out there. Not because it's the absolute worst product, but because people who drink it drink a lot of it. And there's just a whole lot of dangers with soy milk, like one glass having enough plant estrogens to interfere with your menstrual cycles or to damage the thyroid.
Specifically for my friend who says she drinks a lot of soy milk, I just pray that she's listening. What would you say in 30 seconds about why she might want to reconsider?
Soy has been linked to digestive distress, thyroid disorders, reproductive problems that can accelerate and contribute to the growth of cancer. And she may feel better right now because she's drinking soy milk, and it's going to depend on the brand, but a lot of those brands are so full of sugar, so they think they're drinking something healthy, but in fact it's a sugar rush.
Wow.
Now, Kayla, tonight our health unit is having a meeting about, you know, creating more awareness around the trans fat issue. Now, what this does tie into the soybean oil industry and the soy industry. So, you know, what they're saying, of course, in the same paragraph is that, you know, we need to avoid or reduce or, you know, basically minimize our exposure to trans fats. But in the same breath, they're also demonizing saturated fat.
Yes, nobody can really make a lot of money on saturated fats from animal products. You can't make a huge amount of money on butter or lard or tallow, for that matter. So they've been demonizing the saturated fats for years because the high-profit vegetable oils are what they make money on. Now, the margarines and shortenings full of trans fats, of course, they have recently been exposed, and at this point, most people do realize there's health problems associated with them. So the vegetable oil industry is very busy creating these new kinds of products that theoretically don't have trans fats, but there's potentially a whole lot of other problems.
So So it's a trans fat lie.
I think so. And the other thing is the way they label these products. You know, they can label it as zero trans fats if they make the serving small enough, etc. There's just various ways to get around the rules.
Okay, we have to take a short break. Doctor, when we come back in our last short segment, we always want to focus on the takeaway. What's the takeaway from this conversation? What's the takeaway from your book, The Whole Soy Story, The Dark Side of America's Favorite Health Food? What do the men and women who are listening to this program, who've just been bowled over by your linking soy to infertility and loss of libido, what do they need to give up? What do they need to replace it with? When we come back in just a moment with Dr. Kayla Daniel and Pam Killeen right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Soy has been heavily marketed as curing everything from cancer to ingrown toenails. But the fact is it doesn't, and the studies are inconsistent and contradictory and mixed at best. What we've got happening right now is the Israeli Health Ministry has come out and warned against soy. They've said babies should not get soy formula, that children up to age 18 should eat it no more than 3 times a week and no more than once a day. And that adults should be cautious because of adverse effects on fertility and increased breast cancer risk.
The book is called The Whole Soy Story, The Dark Side of America's Favorite Health Food. We're in conversation with Dr. Kayla T. Daniel. Just coming to the end of our conversation. So, doctor, if we could, let's do the negative side, the positive side. Why is my friend and why are so many others drinking soy milk and so convinced that they need a lot of soy in their nutrition?
Most likely because of the heavy marketing of soy. The marketing of soy as a health food that's likely to prevent all sorts of ailments that is supposedly going to bring us optimum health. So many, many people do think soy is a health food, but I'm here to say it's not a health food and it's not going to cure any diseases. And it's not even been proven safe. And we've had health warnings coming from the Israeli Health Ministry, the French Food Agency, the German Institute of Risk Assessment, even at Cornell University here in the United States, having to do with soy increasing breast cancer risk, no less. And yet soy is promoted as preventing cancer.
In a nutshell, you're saying get soy out of your diet. Who is most upset by your message besides soybean farmers?
It's disturbing to many people who feel they don't know what to eat at this point. And my recommendation to people is look to what Mother Nature has given us to eat. Look at whole foods, real foods, and slow foods. And yes, you're probably going to need to prepare them yourself, but guess what? They're going to taste better, they're better for you, and it's what Mother Nature provided and designed us for. And I think we need to be suspicious about Father Technology and heavy marketing. Because whenever we start reading about something being healthy in the news, you can count on some big industry behind it. And that's soy, of course, but also things that are low fat. Because guess what? If you take a product and take the fat out, the product can be sold twice, first as, say, low-fat milk or skim milk, and then as ice cream because people are craving it. Much bigger profit that way.
Now, what you touched on, Kayla, there was a phenomenon in marketing called negative nutrition. So a lot of the consumers out there today are very, very confused over what to eat. They're terrified of eating dairy products because of all the negative nutrition coming out in science. And so they do turn towards, unfortunately, foods like soy milk, almond milk, rice milk, all of these newfangled foods. And they really do believe that they're healthy, but they don't understand this game that's going on in science called negative nutrition.
That's right, and they don't understand the huge marketing interests, and they don't understand how many doctors and health experts are under great pressure to go along with the whole marketing scheme. And we really just need to eat food as Mother Nature provided. And the problem for people is a lot of people have good reason to be suspicious of supermarket milk. And it's so hard for us to get raw milk from pastured cows. And I'm sure you've done many shows on that whole issue.
Mm-hmm.
But this is part of the dilemma people have because so much of what we find in our stores is really an inferior product. But one of the very worst of those is something like soy milk and veggie burgers and these highly, highly processed products.
Doctor, we have to leave it there. We are out of time. So kind of you to join us. Dr. Kayla Daniel, the author of the book, The Whole Soy Story, The Dark Side of America's Favorite Health Food, in a line I was just reading at the top. Kayla Daniel blows the lid off nutritional dogma. Soy is not a miracle food. Doctor, thank you so much. Where can people get more information about Dr. Daniel and about your book?
I've got two websites, naughtynutritionist.com and wholesoystory.com.
Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thanks, Kayla.
Okay, one final word, Pam, Colleen, if I could, about the discussion tonight at the health unit, because there will be a lot of publicity on it. The health unit wants to boost their efforts to get rid of trans fats, you would say?
I would say they need to read a book called Know Your Fat by Dr. Mary Enig. She's a foremost lipid scientist, and she, back in the 1970s, warned everybody about the rise in consumption of vegetable oils in general. So Dr. Mary Enig, just look her up on the internet, read her book, Know Your Fats, and read that book.
So would you applaud what the health unit is doing tonight?
I think it's a good start, but I think a lot more needs to be done. We still need to learn the truth about the benefits of saturated fat.
You're worried they're going to throw out the baby with the bathwater.
That's right. Their eye is still off the target. It's still off the target. Enjoy your butter. Enjoy your lard. Enjoy your red meat.
And eggs and bacon.
That's right.
Always start every day. Pam Colleen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay, 11 o'clock news just around the corner. When we